6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no such a thing. Hey, get that out of here. What the hell is this, Chris? Why is there, what the, oh, come on, please, please. Riley doesn't like swine. Come on.
Feed him to the pigs.
What is going on here?
This feed him to the pigs.
All right, enough. Get out. Get out. Oh, this is going on too long, isn't it? I didn't know that this sound effect would never stop. Oh, my God. Keep it going. This is tremendous. Yay, piggies. It's Friday.
Wow. It's like one of those urinals that never stops running.
It's a never-ending pig noise. Oh, my. Good morning, piggies. And I don't mean you people out there. I mean the pigs that just were removed from the studios.
Yes.
We're all pigs. Come on, aren't we? Come on, just eat it up. Eat, eat, eat.
Why, because it's like an all-male show? Is that what
I'll tell you. No. Oh. I have nothing to do about that. I'm just talking in terms of consumer culture, my friend.
Oh.
I've been reading this book. I got a head full of it.
Because I don't eat no bacon, all right?
Yeah, I know, but you eat. You eat. You know, you don't look like you're starving, right?
No.
I'm not saying you're fat, but you don't look like you're starving, am I right?
No.
What do you eat? What do you snack on? Come on, let's talk food again.
All right. I'll admit it. I snacked on some stuff out of the vending machine over here. Some Welch's,
whatever they are. That's right. I came in. You got the Welch's jelly bean things. You got a thing of Starburst. You got your Snapple going.
Yeah.
I had a yogurt. This is what I'm reading. This Nation of Rebels, Why Counterculture Became Consumer Culture by these Canadian guys, Joseph Heath and Andrew Potter.
What would they know? They're Canadians.
They got a little distance. They can just sit there and like, oh, look at what the crazy Americans are doing. Make a note of that.
Oh, yeah, and they're really yucking it up there in Manitoba, is that it?
It rains free medicine.
Oh,
free medicine in Canada. You go to Canada, it's like, is that snow? No, it's Prozac. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Yay! Fill your bag with Prozac.
They give out needles, too, for the stuff you have to chew up?
Whatever you got. Whatever you need up there, they give it to you.
Okay.
But some people complain about that health care plan. But I'll tell you something. These guys, Joseph Heath and Andrew Potter, the guys who wrote this book, are going to be on the show next week. So I'm in it. I'm reading it. And I like the book. They kind of criticize. It's a very interesting argument about capitalism, about how... consumer culture or capitalist culture just appropriates anything that may appear rebellious into a sellable commodity.
We can make money from that.
Sure. And I'm not quite done with their argument yet. I'm only a quarter of the way through, and up to this point, they've debunked Freud. They've debunked some progressive French thinkers, and they're starting to posit their argument.
Oh.
And so I'm looking forward to talking to these guys because it's interesting stuff because their argument is that a lot of what progressives, think they stand for, a lot of, very specific progressive agendas are unattainable. And they are making this argument that a lot of the posturing of progressives has been appropriated by the very system that they're fighting against and fed back to them as fashion.
Well, I don't know. I consider myself to be a pragmatic progressive.
Okay.
I consider it progress if I have a good dinner.
I consider myself to be an uninformed reactionary.
Uh-oh.
I'll just fly off the handle about anything, man. No, I do my homework, and I try to keep up on things. We talk about the issues most of the time here. We got the weekend coming up, which I'm very excited about, right?
Me too. I went to bed early last night, man. It was scary how early I went to bed.
I didn't go to bed early. I lost most of my day yesterday. I don't know how. I went to therapy, and it was good, and then I went to... What else did I do, man? I did some reading. I've been working on getting my Jerusalem syndrome back in my head, so that's taken up about 3 hours a day of me rehearsing in my apartment.
Now, you're doing this from memory, so you're kind of like re-memorizing stuff? Is that what you're
doing? Yeah, it's just sort of, it's my story. The whole thing is me, but, I haven't done it in a couple of years, so I'm just reprogramming my brain. I'm getting into it. I'm getting the juice. I'm pacing around my apartment. I'm screaming and yelling. It's great.
Now, I got a question for
what?
You. Do you kind of like, do you tweak it at all as you go along? As you rehearse it, do you kind of like, maybe this word will work better?
I've been updating it. It doesn't need a lot of updating, but some of the language and some of the stuff in there, I'm sort of tweaking a little bit. There are certain things that I didn't say that I want to say. There's little things I'm adding here to keep it interesting. But all in all, it's been very exciting to get back into that groove. Now, you saw that movie last night, Asylum.
Yesterday afternoon, yeah, I did.
Tell me what that was about.
Okay.
and whether it was a good film.
Well, it was a good film. It's a documentary. It was a pretty straightforward reading of the plight of one woman who I had actually interviewed when she was in detention at an immigration facility in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
It's African immigrant?
Yeah, Ghanaian. This is a Ghanaian woman who was fleeing female genital mutilation, FGM. Her father had arranged a marriage for her, and they actually had her on the table getting ready to do this procedure where they essentially remove a woman's clitoris.
Mm-hmm.
And she escaped. She came to the States, and as soon as she... And, of course, they gave her a passport that didn't have her picture on it, and they said, oh, no, you'll get through okay.
Right.
And, of course, she didn't. So she was locked up for a period of time.
Here?
Yes, here in Elizabeth, New Jersey. I had a chance to talk to her while she was there. She was really, really, I mean, her whole thing was centered around her family,
mm-hmm.
her sister, her mother, her father, although she didn't know her father for a long time. And it was when she went to see her father that this whole nightmare began. Her mother told her that her father was dead because she didn't want this woman, Baba, to see his father, because she knew this was going to happen.
Right.
She knew that the first thing he was going to do was arrange a marriage. She was going to him to get his blessing to marry somebody else.
Yeah.
He said, oh, no, this is the one you're going to marry, and this is the procedure you're going to have before you get married.
Damn.
And that's what led her to come to this country.
Now, this is a documentary that follows her.
Yeah.
And a few other people. And
it's really just about her.
Was it compelling?
I knew the story already. So for me, it was like, hearing and seeing something that I had seen before some years earlier. It was tragic in its own way because she was trying to get her son to come to this country. She's since been released and she's living a normal life, bought a house in Jersey. But she was trying to get her son here, a 14-year-old son, and 3 weeks before he was due to come, he contracted spinal meningitis and died.
Wow, this is heavy stuff, man.
Yeah.
So this is going to be on Showtime on Monday.
No, it's going to be on Cinemax.
Oh, on Cinemax. All right,
yeah, it's 6:30 on Monday evening. Yeah.
Okay, cool. We got to go in a second here. It's interesting how much mail we get in response to the little secondary things we talk about.
I know. Isn't it a trip?
We cleared up the grub steak thing. We kind of felt stupid about that a grub steak is not actually a cut of meat. A grub steak is money that prospectors were given for their food resources before they went on their journey.
Yeah.
Also, all the talk about beef jerky and the cramming of the colon with meat, raising the level of colon cancer potential, to 30, it's high.
30%
higher. 30% higher than if you don't eat this stuff. Someone emailed me this very cute but informative cartoon website called The Meatrix. So if you want to go to themeatrix.com, it's very funny, and it's funny, but it's very informative about, what's happened to how the family farm was, run over and taken over by agribusiness. I recommend taking a look at it. You can actually even get active in some of the, not necessarily anti-meat movement, but in, bringing back the family farm and just the horrors of agribusiness and how to take some action against that. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some good news out of Cobb County, 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Ask your doctor if morning sedition is right for you. Then listen anyway. Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
And now, the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
Deep in Washington, D.C., lives a group that has the ability to cloud citizens' minds. What evil lurks in the heart of a shadow government? Mark Maron knows. When we last left our hero, his search for Colin Powell had led him to a New York strip club called the Velvet Peanut. He was looking for a lady with a snake.
Hey, baby. Want to dance?
Sorry, doll. I'm working a case. I'm a private dick.
You and every other guy who comes in here, except you're a little more private.
I thought you worked with a snake.
I do. He's my boss, and he's waiting for you in the back room.
Well, well, well. Look whose luck just ran out.
It was the torture master himself, Alberta Torquemada Gonzalez, with three of his goons. And they were looking at me the way Laura Bush would look at Harvey Firestein. And that ain't pretty, no matter which way you're facing. Surprised to see you here, Gonzalez. Guess I didn't get the memo.
Keep cracking wise, Seamus. I'm about to get Abel Grabe on your ass. Grab him, boys.
Hey, wait, guy. They worked me over like I was Cat Stevens going through airport security. When I came to, I was strapped to a chair, tied up worse than a universal health care bill in committee. And Gonzalez was coming toward me with a bullwhip.
You're going to tell me what you know about Powell, but I only know one way to ask.
I knew Gonzalez was just trying to rattle me, but he was gone. Wacko, playing with half a deck. He was zeroing in on me like a senior citizen on a bottle of Canadian blood pressure pills.
Is this the champagne room?
It was my pal Bill Clinton with a friend. Hey, Bubba, get me out of here.
Hey, buddy. Gonzalez, now I know what's going on here. Let him go.
You want him? Come and get him.
You know, my doctor said I should avoid spicy foods, but I'm in the mood for a little Mexican.
Oh, great. The squeaky little lawyer from Houston versus the 58-year-old former president with a heart condition. These guys had less muscle than a Guantanamo prisoner on a hunger strike.
You hit like a girl, Clinton.
That was a girl. This is Mindy. I met her at the bar. This is me.
Gonzalez went down like Bush's job numbers.
You all right, buddy?
Yeah. Just help me get untied. I looked around. Gonzalez had vanished quicker than mainstream news coverage of the Iraq War. I got a light out of here, Bubba, and find Colin Powell.
Powell, buddy, he's in Washington, hawking his resume like Rumsfeld handed out no-bid contracts to Halliburton.
New York was a bum steer, and Washington was calling my name. But I had one more thing to do.
These dances are on me, buddy. And when you get to Washington, remember what I told you about the inauguration.
Will Mark get to Washington in time to save Colin Powell from the swinging, razor-sharp death trap over the Jefferson Memorial? Have I just given away next week's episode? Can you disregard everything I just said? Find out next time when we hear Mindy say,
I don't care if he is your friend, Bill. That cheap bastard didn't tip me.
That's next week on The Shadow Government. And remember to tune in later to Morning Sedition's old-time radio presentation of the comedy team of Marin and Riley.
I'm asking you for the last time, who's in the first segment of the show this morning?
No, who's in the fifth segment after the news break?
I'm not asking what's in the fifth segment.
No, who's in the fifth segment? What's in the third segment?
I don't give a darn who's in the third segment.
Oh, he's doing traffic and weather.
No.
That's the comedy team of Marin and Riley. Coming up later.
22 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Morning Sedition Friday. I can't wait for the week to be done in a couple hours.
Yeah, but wow, a couple hours.
I got no big pull-up for me, you know, for a lot of other people it's just starting out. But by the end of the day, hopefully it will be done for you as well, at least
yeah.
For a couple of days. I'm not doing much comedy this weekend. You know what's sad about me, Riley? You know what I'm looking forward to doing? Taking my change over to the Coinstar machine. How sad is that? I'm like, I'm sitting here like, I can't wait to fill my bag up with the change and you put it in. You ever do this?
No. Let me tell you something about Coinstar. Coinstar machines are amazing because people never just put coins. They put laundry lint.
Oh yeah, you
there's
find
all
kinds
of junk in those little slots.
You're like, it's like, where did I get a penny from the Ukraine? Anyways,
is that Yushchenko?
Yeah, exactly. What is this? Where does this money come from? But dig this: a federal judge Thursday ordered—that's yesterday, folks. If you're wondering—ordered a suburban Atlanta school system, a Cobb County school system, remove stickers from its high school biology textbooks that call evolution a theory, not a fact, saying the disclaimers are an unconstitutional endorsement of religion.
Yeah.
It's a done deal.
That's right. Learn that stuff in church, all
right? That's right. Here's a quote from U.S. District Judge Clarence Cooper. By denigrating evolution, the school board appears to be endorsing the well-known prevailing alternative theory, creationism, or variations thereof, even though the sticker does not specifically reference any alternative theory. What was interesting to me, Mark Riley, about this story is that one of the factors in the judge deciding this case was because they only used that specific example from science,
yeah.
It was clear to him what they were trying to do.
You know, what's amazing about this, you know, people just won't give this up. Next door to Georgia, actually, is it next door? Very close by in Alabama.
Yes.
They have a three-page thing or a multi-page thing that's essentially the same as this little sticker.
Right.
And they say, hey, we don't care what they did over in Georgia. We got our thing, and we're keeping it.
Right, because they say it's not as specific. It's a little more broad. But
longer, but less specific.
But the horrible thing about this is that the argument that these idiots make, and these people are idiots, I have to be honest with you. The textbook, here's the argument. This is from a lawyer, I believe, Michael Manley, an attorney for the parents who sued over the stone. That's the other team. Sorry.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, this is a representative. This is a statement put out by the school board. Quote, the textbook stickers are a reasonable and even-handed guide to science instruction and encouraging students to be critical thinkers. That's their defense. It's the same defense as when religious people say, open your mind. Hey, if I were to open my mind, I certainly wouldn't believe in something that narrow. I mean, the truth of the matter is, if you're a kid and somebody says, okay, here are your choices. Believe that a man in the sky invented everything or study. What are you going to do? I go with the first one. That's a cop-out, man. I mean, it's so stupid, this whole argument about, when people say it's so complex, how could it not have been done by anything other than divine intelligence? That's almost like saying, I don't understand it. It must be magic.
You know, in Alabama, they say, because they got a 9-paragraph disclaimer in Alabama, they say that evolution is a controversial theory. But here's the interesting part, Mark.
Yeah.
They say any statement about the origin of life is, quote, not fact, unquote. Now, if that's true, why study any of it? If it's not fact, if none of it's fact, why bother?
But that's what they're saying, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then this is brilliant, though. The judge says, quote, while evolution is subject to criticism, particularly with respect to the mechanisms by which it occurred, the sticker misleads students regarding the significance and value of evolution in the scientific community. They're asking people of an impressionable age to disregard science in the name of believing something that they explain by mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and the truth of the matter is that if you really want to instigate better education, if you want people to be interested, you should have them encourage them to explore the nuances of life and the possibilities. Like, why not set the kids, if you don't believe evolution is a fact, why don't you say, hey, kids, prove that it isn't.
Yeah, right.
Why don't you take a little time to do that? So we're going to be back with somebody from the ACLU down there in Marietta County.
Yeah.
Maggie Garrett's going to be with us to tell us exactly what happened there yesterday.
And later this morning, your homie's coming on here, Sam Lipsyte, and we're going to have fun with him. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Look, if you believe... Oh, my God. What is this? Why are you doing this to me, man? Screw the Black Crows. I'm serious, man. They suck. They're hacks. And just because, if I got to go back and forth with Dan Pashman on the air again, this is a two-day argument. No, we're not doing it now. We're not doing it now. I'm not doing it. We're going to do it later. I'm not going to do it now. We're going into a guest. We got something to do. But, the Black Crowes suck, all right? And they put out 4 albums that have proven nothing but that. They can't even sell out a real auditorium.
Was that a cover version of Hard to Handle?
Of course it was a cover version. That's the best they could do for their first hit. Then they just ripped off the Stones for 4 records. I'm not going to even do this right now because Dan Patterson says they're a damn good band. Damn good band. No, Larson, we're not doing it now. All right. Here we go. Anyways, I was going to say, if you believe, because we're about to talk to somebody from the ACLU down in Georgia about the case yesterday, the glorious victory on behalf of the secularists, the good guys. Like, I just think that if you believe, why don't you just practice the principles of your religion and how you behave towards other people, not try and legislate it and make everybody behave like you. I mean, that's what the protection is there for. Here we go. Let's do this now. I just wanted to break this story. Apparently, the Pentagon reveals that they rejected a bunch of chemical weapons. And I just wanted to put that out there because this Palm Pilot is actually, it's based on more truth than you might imagine. And it was funny because Ramon delivered it to us wearing, bioterror gear.
Really?
Completely encased in some sort of outfit. It's Donald Rumsfeld's Palm Pilot for today.
10 a.m. meeting to discuss possible non-lethal chemical weapons agenda. Number one, an aphrodisiac chemical weapon that would provoke widespread homosexual behavior among enemy troops, dealing a severe blow to morale. Didn't make it up. Note, be careful how I phrase this. Note, after using this weapon, our troops will have to deal with the enemy's devastating put-downs, vicious gossip, and catty remarks. The two-tiered attack approach there. Number two, chemical weapons that attract swarms of enraged wasps or angry rats to troop positions, making them uninhabitable. Upside, wasps and rats won't expect armored Humvees or ask embarrassing questions. So what does that mean? Are they just going to dump garbage on them? Number three, chemical, you know what I mean? I know what that weapon's called, garbage. Number three, chemical weapons that cause severe and lasting halitosis, making it easy to identify guerrillas trying to blend in with civilians. Note, if these soldiers are captured, their breath could cause a severe problem to our jailers. Initiate Project Altoid. Project Altoid! All right. Man, sell, sell, sell. That's what I say when it comes to comedy. 1 p.m. Test a couple of drops of aphrodisiac weapon. If it works on me, it'll work on anyone. Note, if it does work, get tickets for the boy from Oz on a night I can truly appreciate it. That was a nice joke. All right. It may be a little bit of stereotyping, but nonetheless a nice joke because we like to dance. All right. Anyways, here we go. We got a guest on the phone. I don't want to keep her hanging through our nonsense too long because this is serious business, but it is Friday. As I said before, yesterday a federal judge in Georgia ruled that stickers placed in high school biology textbooks on constitutionally endorsed religion and ordered their removal. Maggie Garrett joins us on the phone from Atlanta. She is a staff lawyer for the ACLU of Georgia. She was one of the lawyers representing the families in the case, Selman versus the Board of Education. Good morning, Maggie. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
Very good. So tell me, how exciting was it to see the look of defeat on the faces of these people?
Well, we're pleased with the decision, of course.
Yes.
We think that it's a win for the parents and the school children in Cobb County, and also for religious freedom.
Absolutely. Well, good. So what was the basic response to everyone in the courtroom to the verdict? I mean, were there groans? Were there like, oh, no, the devil? You know, I mean.
Well, actually, we didn't get the decision in a courtroom. We got it in our offices via email. So,
okay.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Not quite the same drama, but of course we were all excited when we got the decision.
So we explained the case for us a little bit, Selma versus the Board of Education, for our listeners who aren't quite up to speed on this.
Sure. In 2001, the Cobb County School District went through the process of adopting new science textbooks, and their previous textbooks didn't teach evolution at all. The pages were actually ripped out of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So this time they realized that they had to adhere to the state mandate and keep the evolution text in the book. They adopted the book, and then a committee approved the book, and then some parents complained saying that it taught evolution, but it did not teach creationism or intelligent design. And so the school board then adopted a disclaimer saying that evolution is a theory, not a fact, and that the students should consider this material critically and implicitly ask students to consider alternatives.
Thank God gravity's a law, huh?
Yeah, right.
Right, exactly.
Maggie Garrett, this is obviously an ongoing battle in states across the country. Alabama, relatively close to Georgia, is saying that their disclaimer, which is 9 paragraphs as opposed to Georgia's 3, is okay and should withstand court scrutiny. What does the ACLU say?
Well, I'm at the ACLU of Georgia, and so this would be an Alabama issue. So I haven't actually read that disclaimer. But, you know, I think that this case sends a clear message that if you're going to put a disclaimer in the book that singles out evolution among all of the other science theories, denigrates it, and then bolsters religious theories, that it's unconstitutional.
Oh, good. So now when did the stickers come off exactly, Maggie?
That I'm not sure of yet. We haven't sort of thought through that quite yet, but the decision calls for the stickers to be removed immediately.
So are there any plans on the behalf of the guilty party to do any other sticker campaign? Are we going to be seeing any All Heathens Go to Hell stickers or anything like that?
I don't know. I haven't heard of any such campaign yet.
You'll stay on top of it for us, though?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Thank you very much, Maggie. It was great talking to you.
We appreciate your work.
Okay. That was Maggie Garrett. She's a staff lawyer for the ACLU of Georgia. Again, if you're just
joining us. A federal judge yesterday ordered a suburban Atlanta school system to remove stickers from its high school biology textbooks that call evolution a theory, not a fact, saying the disclaimers are an unconstitutional endorsement of religion. The judge also said while evolution is subject to criticism, particularly with respect to the mechanism by which it occurred, the sticker misleads students regarding the significance and value of evolution in the scientific community. The defense of this on the other side is, of course, the response from the Cobb County School. The textbook stickers are a reasonable and even-handed guide to science instruction and encouraging students to be critical thinkers. No! It's enclosing students to be non-critical thinkers, to close off the part of their mind that should be curious about investigating the mysteries of life and not rationalizing them as some byproduct of a thing that is unexplainable.
You know what? I get a feeling that they're going to come back and say, you know, the adhesive we use to put these stickers on just is so tough, we can't get them off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
that's because it's God sticky.
Yeah. Yeah. God won't let us take these. I remember when federal courts ruled, for example, that the high school in Little Rock, Arkansas had to integrate. They stood in the doorways. Oh, no, we're not. Something tells me that there's going to be more resistance to this than simply that school board going in and telling everybody to take those disclaimers out. It's not the way everybody in the South thinks, but when it comes to this sort of thing, you can find an incredible stubborn streak in people.
This type of religious religiosity.
There it is, religiosity.
Is anti-American. It's anti-democratic. These people are working against the Constitution of the United States of America. They are traitorous on some level because of their actions. And I don't have anything, like, I understand the need for belief. I understand the belief in God. I'm not mocking Christianity. I am on some level, saying, look, you cannot legislate your beliefs and impose them on other people. It is unconstitutional, number one, and it's coercive and it's fascistic. So these are essentially the neocon death cults, Christo fascist zombie brigades in action in our school boards. And if you are a reasonable parent within these school boards, as I am reaching out to Democrats as well, even if you're a Republican, I urge you to stand up against these people, because this is where it's going to go down. This is where it starts to trickle in, the slow degradation of the rights of our kids. And I don't even have kids. You understand?
You know what else is problematic about this? They do all this stuff without really understanding that half the time it doesn't work anyway. People are going to question. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
When people see this, I grew up with one nation, under God, indivisible, blah, blah, blah. God was in all of these different aspects of school. They used to let the Catholic kids go to catechism on Thursdays during a class period, the whole nine yards. It didn't make me any more or any better a Christian for having been exposed to this bombardment. The Christianity in me came from my folks, not from school.
Right, yeah, but my point is that if you enter this into the dialogue of kids, if you start saying stuff like this, it does not initiate a critical debate within their mind. It initiates a cop-out. I mean, it gives them, like, if they were, if a kid of one of these parents came home and said, guess what, Mommy, we just learned all about how man evolved from monkeys. And I said, no, 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 the man in the sky made us. And the parent would be go, that's a good boy. Come here. Good for you for, enforcing, the ignorance we are teaching you at home in the schoolroom. Hopefully many of your friends will believe. Be sure you tell your friends that they're wrong when they say that science is good. But anyways, we'll be back. I'm going to try and get Pashman to find me that story. Dan Pashman, son of Loser, Linda Pashman. Apparently,
don't let him in the studio because you're going to start arguing.
There was a Christian Aid Foundation that sought to
adopt. Oh, I have that story. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. They sought to adopt, 3,000 of the orphans
from the tsunami
yeah. victims. And when they weren't able to broker this thing, they pulled their aid out altogether. Very Christian.
How sick is that?
We're going to talk about Iraq when we come back. 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, all right. 49 past the hour. 49 past the hour. Why are you doing this to me, man? It's
slow torture, isn't it?
Black crows suck. They suck. The guy can't even marry a decent actress. What are you kidding me? I mean, his girlfriend sucks. His wife sucks. You know, they both suck. I can't, you know, just because Chris Robinson, you know, this is all stemming from a discussion I had. By the way, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
It's yep.
Morning Edition. An argument that I had with Dan Pashman yesterday. You know, we don't argue about important things necessarily, but he looks me right in the eye, and he's like, you know, America's the Black Crowes' best album. It's like, how did you even stay with them that long, the hack bastards, ripping off the Stones? They didn't even do it as good as Aerosmith did. The reason that, you know, and now they're getting back together, and he's just defending them, you know, and he's defending them as and using as barometer, of course, is the Pashman argument that U2 sucks. U2, whether they suck or not is not the issue. They at least have their own sound. They at least have a unique sound. They at least stand far and above, you know, many of the bands that are functioning today in terms of being individuals. Whether they sold out or whether they got watered down, overproduced, or repeated themselves, doesn't matter. The Black Crowes never had their own sound, never gained any momentum and popularity because they were hacks. And, you know, and he's telling me they're a good band, and he's defending it as if it's some sort of, like, you know, like it's some sort of constant in the universe, that the Black Crowes are a damn good band. You know, well, Dan, I see you in the booth. We're going to talk about it later, maybe.
Wait a minute. We don't have that much time.
All right. It's stupid. Because music is just a taste thing anyways, right?
It is what it is. If you like the Black Crowes, fine. If you like U2, fine. If you think they suck, fine. Who Well, no, I guess people do care.
But he defends them in the Pashman barometer of things, you know? What? Come on in, then. Just come in. I'm not going to play these games.
Oh, no. You're too high-minded now. You see how he popped his head there? Right.
Well, then we're going to talk about Iraq, then.
Let's talk about it.
All right, let's get back to this.
I like a little vitriol.
First, let's talk about this. A Virginia-based missionary group, World Health, has dropped its plans to place 300 Muslim Muslim tsunami orphans in a Christian children's home. The group's president, the Reverend Vernon Brewer, told the news agency, okay, well, dig this, all right? They dropped their plans because they said, once we became aware that the government refused to let these children be placed in a Christian home, we immediately stopped all fundraising efforts for the remaining 250 Indonesian orphan children. It wasn't 3,000, it's 300. But they just like, well, we're going to stop helping the orphan children if we can't own them. If we can't own them and program them when they're, you know, nice and young.
This is a fundamental problem that some, not all, some Christians in the United States have, where they really don't see trying to convert people to Christianity, or kids who already have a religion, mind you, who are born of Muslim parents. They don't see any problem with that. Mark, it is something that if you go around the world and talk to Hindus or Buddhists, their religions are supposedly based on tolerance of other religions.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, this little slice of Christianity is so venal and so greedy that they have to say, well, you know, these kids are at their absolute most desperate time in their lives, and we're going to convert them, and if we can't convert them, then to hell with them.
Yeah,
that's absurd. That's obscene. That's not Christian.
It's literally the hell with them. It's a failed business opportunity to them.
Yeah, it is. And you know, American Christians need to get wise to the people that believe this. They need to get wise to the fact that with Christianity comes tolerance. You don't have to convert these kids. You need to help them. You need to help them eat. You need to help them bathe. You need to help them with, you know, getting back to hygienic conditions so they can live their lives. Let them be Muslims if that's what they are, for God's sake.
Right. Do real missionary work. Don't just try to own them and own their mind.
Yeah.
So here we go. As we used to say constantly, because, you know, leading up to the election, you know, it was, you know, a report came out last year, but the National Intelligence Council has deemed Iraq the new Afghanistan, that this is the primary terrorist manufacturing plant in the world, that there's all kinds of new terrorists breeding and coming out of Iraq, that, you know, a whole new generation that may be distinct from al-Qaeda is starting to form and will disperse itself throughout the world because of the Bush 2 war, because of the neocon death cult's failed utopian agenda. The failed free market utopian agenda is not working. And even if it does, you know, even if they end up pulling out, and even if it does settle down even a little bit, the damage has already been done.
There you go. The damage has already been done.
Yep.
Because al-Qaeda has become the template. Had Bush used his head and gone after Al-Qaeda in the first place with due diligence and gotten Osama bin Laden, then the template wouldn't have had time to form. It's way too, if they caught bin Laden tomorrow, it's way too late.
Yeah, the franchises have already been set up.
There you go.
Yeah, and they don't even have to keep the same name. As a matter of fact, they're encouraged to change the names.
Yeah, go ahead. Call it anything.
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah. Ten Heads, Al-Ansar, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, we know. You know, and the thing is, they have set up these loosely based networks. They set up these situations. I mean, it's like selling dope. It's like, you know, you bust five guys who are the head of the ring, five other guys come to take their place.
It's exactly like selling drugs in the sense that, you know, the alignments that are being made. I mean, Al-Qaeda was fairly specific, but this the profile of the insurgency, from all indications, from the people we have talked to over the last year,
yeah,
is that there's many different factions. There are jihadists. There are just dispossessed, angry Iraqis. There are ex-Baathists. There are Islamic fighters from other places that I guess would be called jihadists.
But strict Sunnis as well.
Right. So, you know, what they're doing is they're starting to not only network amongst themselves, but to network with other people and to make, agreements with other groups that may not even have the same agenda but are willing to fight along the same lines.
Well, before this, there was a 50-50 chance that some of these different component groups would have been fighting each other.
Right.
But who united them all?
George Bush.
There you go.
The neocon death cult has united the world of terrorists in one finite fight against us. And, you know, and it's always led to my suspicion that, you know, without the Cold War model of that, the constant, arms race, that, you know, this was something that happened and they kind of expected it. In my devious thoughts, my most evil thoughts, they wanted this to happen. They wanted to have a free-floating threat to instill fear in the populace whenever they need it at all times to create that same tone of perpetual fear that the Cold War did.
Yep.
So they could control the people.
There you go.
All right, here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, urge Congress to make gay aphrodisiac chemical weapon available for civilian use. We're going to talk about that a little more at top of the hour. Two, send out mass email with the subject heading, horny teens are hot for you. And when they open it, it says, because of global warming. Three, prepare for Bush's inauguration. Restoke your disgust to pre-November 2nd level. Four, for Martin Luther King Day, criticize the Blue Man Group for not having any black members. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know where Prince Harry got that Nazi shirt? Cheney's closet, man. It looks like the wardrobe trailer for Triumph of the Will in there, man. Wake up, sheeple. It's coming down.
It is coming down because Lizard Man Cheney is pushing for Social Security. They got a new job for him now. He's a hustler. We'll talk about that in the next hour. We've also got Roger Lowenstein to talk more about Social Security as well when we continue here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, and of course, the rest of America. All right, enough of that. I'm sorry, Chris, I just like the piggy noises. The pig noises, as Hunter S. Thompson said, the pigs are out of the tunnel. Again, they're out of the tunnel. The neocon death cult about to be inaugurated for a second term. The pigs are definitely out of the tunnel, Mark Riley.
Yeah, I forgot all about it. And it's the same week as Martin Luther King's birthday, too.
Man, the timing couldn't be worse.
What would Dr. King have said about
this? I wonder what Dr. King would have said about this.
He would have been highly upset.
Of course he would have, after what went on in Ohio, I'm sure. Anyways, let's, top of the hour, and what am I going to be talking about? We had this huge conversation about crockpots yesterday, because me and Pashman are crockpot queens, and then Kalo comes in, it's like, dude, I got one.
Yeah.
You got a crock pot. You're like, what do I do with it now? You throw a bunch of stuff in there, and you turn it on medium, and you put the lid on, and you go to sleep, and you wake up, and you're like, yay, food!
Okay, that doesn't seem safe to me.
It is safe.
Okay, I'm going to plug something in. It's going to heat my food, and I'm going to go to bed?
Yeah, you go to bed, yeah. And it just cooks it all night long.
My house will be on fire.
No, it won't. It'll smell like good stuff. Like, you put all the raw stuff in, like a big slab of meat, some beans, maybe some onions, a little pepper, right?
Now, what do? Do I cook the beef beforehand, or do I let the...
Oh, boy.
Dan,
see, I generally just do beans and soups. Dan, you're going to have to go to Passman, Son of Lewis, and Linda Passman to find out. But dig this.
Okay.
Dig this. After all that talk, here's what our audience, you know, the powerful progressive audience that we have, Mark Riley.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Maren, here's a great tidbit for you to fulfill your crockpot obsession from Women's Day. All right?
Oh, wow.
January 4th. Quote, did you know the slow cooker was first introduced in 1970 to celebrate the first annual National Slow Cooking Month in January? Betty Crocker Slow Cooker Helper is sponsored...
Slow Cooker Helper?
It's sponsoring an Ode to Slow Cooking contest. And then he puts in parentheses, dude, I can't make this up. Entrants are asked to share an original poem or essay about why they love to slow cook or share a memorable slow cooking experience. Oh, I remember that one time I put the ham hock in with the beans and I went to bed and then it was yummy.
Ooh.
Oh.
You're a winner.
I know. No, I can't make fun. I'm probably going to write one. Adults 18 or older who live in the United States are eligible, and entries can be submitted through February 18th for contest rules and prizes. Go to www.bettycrocker.com. Passman, we're in.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to write a poem that's going to kick Passman's butt.
Oh, Lord. You've been doing that all morning. What are you talking about?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
You can't get into an argument with Passman. Even if you win, he sits there smirking and smiling as if for some reason he somehow had the upper hand in it. Even
always has the upper hand. Well, he never loses. You didn't know he's like Bush.
No, I feel like he lost.
Oh,
and yet he's still smiling and acting all chipper. It's no fun to argue with somebody who's not going to cry. You know, I just don't understand. If you can't have an argument and make someone go, all right, what? Then it's, well, I'm not talking. You know what I'm saying? Metaphor.
I know. But after a while, it gets boring, man. And not only that, you get a reputation of being, like, cruel.
Hey, wait, I'm not cruel.
You're not cruel, but you get a reputation. Believe me, take it from one who knows. Take it from one who used to do that sort of thing for sport back in the day.
Yeah.
You get a reputation, you know, people kind of, like, walk the other way when they see you come into a room because they figure you're going to aim something at them.
Yeah,
you're
going to
hurt their feelings.
Yeah, I used to be
and
like that.
Hey, man, you're pretty ugly looking.
Yeah, that
kind of stuff.
Oh, I never did that. But
I have.
But this argument is like, it's just silly stuff. And I'm not even going to go into it again, you know, until they play another Black Christmas song. Chris, why do you let them put you up to that? It's not even that I don't understand why the Black Crows are marginally popular with a few people that don't have the courage to apply some old Stones albums. And maybe get a couple of Led Zeppelin songs that every Black Crow song is stolen from either.
Except for Hard to Handle, that's stolen directly from the master, Otis Redding.
Right, well, that was their deal with the devil. They're like, you know what? We can't really go on our integrity or authenticity because we have none. So if we do a cover of a song that was very popular in the R&B world and also in the whole country and world because of Otis Redding, they think that they're drawing from the roots of rock and roll when they're just really ripping it off. And then they just basically rip off the model of the Stone songs, and then their Zeppelin songs. They just completely lifted this Zeppelin riff, not appropriated it, not used it in a tasteful way, just ripped it off. Why do I get worked up with it? It makes me look stupid. You know what I mean? Why can't I get worked up about, you know, why the world's going down the toilet? It's just because Passman...
Because the Black Crows suck. Isn't that the world's going down the toilet?
It's all of it. It's their fault that we're in Iraq. The Black Crows...
Yeah.
And the dude, he can't even like Kate Hudson. I mean, how can you be a real rock and roll guy and be married to that talentless turd? I mean, let's be honest about it. What is she,
Goldie Hawn's going to come down here and slap you upside your head?
I didn't mean call her a turd. She's a turdette.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's rude of me.
There we go. Accuracy in media.
Now I'm ashamed. You know what? I'm sorry, Kate. But
this is what I'm talking about. That. You know, drop a bomb on somebody without even thinking kind of thing, and the next thing you know, people go, oh, man, you know, he's going to drop a bomb on me next.
Yeah, no, that's not it. All right,
hey,
you know,
I'm sorry, Maren. Wasn't Kate Hudson in Almost Famous?
Yes, she was.
So she was your co-star.
Was she nice to me? Why don't you ask that question?
Why don't you ask it more?
Yes, she was very nice to me. What's the problem?
You're going on a turd. Good job. Making lots of friends.
Yeah. I guess she'll be recommending you for another couple gigs.
I'll be honest with you. I feel bad I called it a turd, but I will not feel bad in saying that I don't think she's tremendously talented, and I think that makes it perfectly reasonable that she's married to the Robinson brother, because he too is a great example of mediocrity, who is willing to do, you know, anything to try to, you know, set his career straight. Kate Hudson is a great example of an actress that's been given way more than she deserves. She's not particularly pretty. She has no real range. She may be cute at moments, but she's certainly not a great actress. She is one of the great queens of mediocrity, all right? And she is married to not even a king of mediocrity, because he's not that successful, a prince of mediocre music, a prince of, like, you know, hackneyed blues-based BS music. And, you know, and I'm not even that angry about it, because now we're not even getting the other side of this conversation, because Passman is in here, and he was just like...
been locked in the newsroom.
And the only problem, the only place that this comes from is that, you know, he insists on saying you two are a bunch of hacks and they're a bad band, yet he'll say that the Black Crowes are a damn good band, you know, without appreciating, you know, at least the authenticity of U2. Now, I'm not a huge U2 fan, you know, and it's like I understand the Black Crowes, but let's call it what it is, you know.
Hey, listen.
What?
Why don't the two of you listen to the Black Eyed Peas and Black 47... And then you got some Black.
Okay.
How about it?
I don't even know those bands.
You know the Black Eyed Peas.
Well, I've heard of them, but I don't know their music, and I need to, maybe
you've
I need to...
You've heard it. Let's get it started. Let's get retarded. Remember?
Yeah.
That's the Black Eyed Peas.
Okay. Well, then it comes full circle, and then, you know, and Patrick's sort of like, well, I'm being a rebel by liking a crappy band. What is that? I am so hip, I like garbage. Yeah.
Lord.
We'll do some.
We got no pressing world issues to talk about here.
I didn't even solicit calls, but apparently either the Kate Hudson turn reference.
Goldie Hawn on line three.
It's Pashman's family on the phone. 14th past the hour. We'll talk about real things when we come back. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's the Rolling Stones. It's 18 past the hour here on Air America Radio. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's someone just ripping off the Rolling Stones somewhere in the exile period. The worst. Come on. The entire mix. I'm not going to do this. And I apologize, Kate Hudson, for calling you a turd. You're not a turd. You're just untalented. And turd is a heavy word. Can I make a bumper sticker out of that? Turd is a heavy word. It's just rude to me, you know, and that's the thing we were talking about, Mark Riley. If you end up doing that and you just blow your steam off everywhere, yeah, you walk around apologizing to everybody. And, you know, I worked with her, yeah, Chris, and here's the kind of person she is. You know, I didn't really have any scenes with her or anything, but she just would walk around with her dog. She had one of those little dogs. You know, some people have dogs that they treat like purses.
Yeah.
That they never put down. She was one of those people. But not unnice. I just don't think her or her husband are very talented at all, and I think they take up space. So here we go. That's all. I mean, I don't know. Look, here's my dream diary from yesterday. This is a clean slate dream diary. Yeah, because I just went to therapy yesterday. I'm all clean. It's just before Bush's inaugural parade, and I'm with my dead cat Butch. We're at a little park in the middle of Washington D.C., surrounded by thousands of cats. Some of the cats were wearing camel face makeup. Some were in all black commando gear. Some were sharpening their claws and whispering softly to each other. I say, "What's going on, Butch? What are you up to now?" Butch whispers to me, "It is better that you do not know, Mark Maron. You will thank me later." Then Butch climbs up on my shoulder, takes out a bullhorn, and says, "Comrades! The day of insurrection is at hand. The coronation of the eunuch, traitor, crystal fascist blow monkey must not come to pass. Let us send a message that will echo down the halls of history. Generations unborn will look back on this day and speak your names with envy and wonder. Now go to your places and know that I love you." Butch climbs down and gives me a long, serious look. "Mark Maron, I leave you now. If I do not make it, take my Che t-shirt. Vaya con Dios." I say, "Hey, Butch, wait, where the hell are you going?" Butch scampers off into the crowd. By now, the parade is going by with bands and soldiers and all that. I can't find Butch anywhere. Then, from somewhere, I hear a voice say, "Comrades,
go! And thousands of cats flooded onto Pennsylvania Avenue. Brakes squeal and cars rear-end each other. I hear the sound of dented trombones. People are screaming and laughing, and Secret Service agents are scrambling, and the Bush motorcade has to stop. Then in the middle of a sea of cats, I see Butch. She raises her fist and through the bullhorn screams, Viva la Revolucion! All at once, this sea of fur started having all manner of filthy cat sex right in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue. Writhing, sweaty, and I've never heard anything that loud in my life. People strained forward with their video cameras, and parents tried to pull away their curious children. The cats kept it up for 3 straight hours until finally the D.C. Fire Department had to come and hose them off. Bush blamed it on the liberal media and demanded another parade. Afterwards, Bush came up to me drenched with a big smile on her face. She said, as usual, we took it lying down. I towed her off, and then we went out to get some pancakes. I woke up, and my bed was filled with civil disobedience.
There you go.
Butch is a powerful cat. Man, I'm so glad that she comes in my dreams and stays with me. I remember Butch. All my cats are doing pretty good lately. Look at this. This is a real story, Riley. We didn't get to it before. The Pentagon considered developing a host of non-lethal chemical weapons that would disrupt discipline and morale among enemy troops. New declassified documents reveal most bizarre among the plans were one for the development of an aphrodisiac chemical weapon that would make enemy soldiers sexually irresistible to each other, provoking widespread homosexual behavior among troops, would cause a distasteful but completely non-lethal blow to morale. It says that. I'm not.
Well, you made this up.
No, it's right.
Come
here.
On, you made it up.
It's on newscientist.com. I'm not making
Who
this
are
up.
They? They made it up.
Well, here
you asked them to make
other
it
ones up. Up. Oh, here's what's in this. Other chemical weapons. An electronic device to inundate the enemy with endless emails touting Viagra substitutes and penile enlargements. Here's another one, a bomb that destroys morale among enemy soldiers by insinuating that it slept with their girlfriends. This one's pretty bad, an antidepressant bomb that makes the enemy ask, why are we wasting our time fighting when there are so many opportunities for personal growth? How about this? A chemical spray that fills enemy soldiers with an irresistible urge to spend the summer backpacking around Europe, ooh, just trying to find themselves. How about this? An explosive device that would disorganize all their personal papers, a.k.a. the clutter bomb. Where did I put my... A weapon that makes enemy soldiers fear combat and attempt to hide in a unit of the Texas Air National Guard. How about that one? That's a secret weapon. How about this one? An anti-personal device that would render ineffective enemy combatants' combat readiness and deployment capability by imposing upon them a dependence upon arcane and frequently circuitous military language, a.k.a. jargon.
Jargon.
Let me read that again. An anti-personnel device that would render ineffective enemy combatants' combat readiness and deployment capability by imposing upon them a dependence upon arcane and frequently circuitous military language, a.k.a. jargon. A weapon that causes enemy soldiers know way too much about the Lord of the Rings. How about that?
But when Frodo first said...
You're making this up.
No, I'm not. But when Gandalf... Wait, don't shoot. I have, you know, the second ring was like.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
Precious. Ooh. Oh. Anyway. Wow. Woo.
So where are we at? Oh, here's the other story I wanted to cover.
Now, this one you didn't make up.
No, this is real. Between 1998 and 2004, the military discharged 20 Arabic and 6 Farsi speakers, according to Department of Defense laws data obtained by the Center for the Study of Sexual Minorities in the Military under a Freedom of Information Act request. They fired these guys because they were gay. And these are exactly the kind of information translators that we need in this effort to figure out whether or not there are, you know, valid terrorist attacks and to decode some of these dispatches from what they call terrorist chatter.
And so, they still have a case of the shorts. They still don't have enough.
They don't have enough, yet they're firing people because of their sexual preference. They're putting, you know, denying people their civil rights, Americans, over actually effectively safeguarding the country against terrorism. Dig that.
Yeah, now, you know, there are people, because there's one advocacy group that says, well, they shouldn't have been at this place, they shouldn't have been hired as translators and trained as translators in the first place.
But isn't that a Christo-fascist...
The Center for Military Readiness. And, you know, they oppose gays serving in the military, but to say that you're going to place someone's sexuality ahead of the nation's security... is kind of sort of in complete contrast to what Bush said he was about during the last campaign, isn't it?
It's backward.
It is certainly
backward. It's backward. It's regressive. It shouldn't even be a concern that these people have a sexual preference that other people don't agree with. Who cares if there are consenting adults involved and it's what they want to do in their own time? What the hell difference does it make? If they do their job, they should be able to do their job. But the idea that this administration is denying Americans their civil rights over effectively safeguarding the country against terrorism is appalling.
And see, it makes assumptions about gay behavior that really have no business being made by anybody. Mm. Anybody. Straight, gay, neuter. It doesn't matter. People should not assume that gays pose, by their gayness, a national security risk, because that's what they're saying.
What they do pose is an individual security risk for a lot of these guys who may not be quite sure about
their own sexuality.
And they don't need that around them all the time because they might want to have some fun in the wrong way that they were taught to be wrong. What happens now?
What happens now?
The music's on.
Roger Lowenstein coming in to talk Social Security.
Oh, okay.
Dick Cheney.
Okay.
Lizard coming out of his nose.
Be afraid.
Trying to sell.
Yeah.
Bush's plan.
Fear.
When we come back,
mm-hmm.
Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
AIDS has killed nearly 6 million children worldwide. That's more than every child in every preschool, grade school, and high school in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, Atlanta, and Miami combined. The time to do something is now. The place is apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
A public service announcement brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Charles Dickens described conservative economics in A Christmas Carol, where Bob Cratchit, a full-time employee, had no health care for Tiny Tim and couldn't even afford a Christmas dinner. This is the world the cons want to take us back to. Terrified workers and a rich conservative elite. For more, join me, Tom Hartman, weekdays noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, and again 1 to 3 a.m. Eastern on Sirius Left 143.
God, this has gotten out of hand today. Where's my coffee? I don't understand what's happening with my coffee. I said one, and now I don't trust the intern.
Oh, it's Friday.
I don't know what's going on. It's 34 past the hour. You know, this is Black Crow's assault by P.W. McDonald's. Like, brilliant idea to keep me at a fever pitch. A fever pitch of teeming. Anyways, as I said, it's 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition. And the Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Santa Catalina Island, California. Your grace...
Heed my words, thou carb-counting succubi resting at the high, firm teats of Windsor Pilates. Gather around the gluttonous sloths hanging from the tattered remnants of Satan's nighty. Oh, boy! Thou worm-kissing skullduggerous jamokes. Final stop, damnation. You can transfer at Milford. Thrice, several modules ago, I told you about a man in Pennsylvania who went berserk with his pickup truck after a Burger King ran out of French fries. 2 weeks ago, I told you about a Seattle hospital where a 200-pound floor buffer got magnetically sucked into an MRI machine. Last week, I told you if you're going to screw me over on fries, don't be surprised when someone tosses a 200-pound floor buffer into the room during your brain exam. Spunamutata! Yeah, I threw that floor buffer in there. That was me! Midnight approaches, thou vexed echo boomers with over $100 billion in purchasing power. Speaking of which, have you ever wanted to find out more about your own personal relationship with God? Well, you might want to check out my new book coming out next month titled, He's Just Not That Into You. Kind of a hip former Gen Xer's take on the rapture, eternal torment, and how we're all worthless. Pick it up. Here's what Publishers Weekly is saying. He's Just Not That Into You is provocative, hilarious, and above all, intoxicatingly liberating. It deserves a place on every heretic's night table. It knows you're a beautiful, smart, funny heretic who deserves better.
Oh, man.
Oh, Basha, shouldn't have moved to Bing Bang, Wah Wah Bing Bang. And now on to this week's Rapture events. By the way, always go into tongues when you have a lousy transition. According to scientists at NASA, or as I like to call it, NASA, a giant iceberg the size of Long Island is going to collide with Antarctica. Today! For it was prophesied in Revelation 10 years ago, on a cold, dark night, a man was killed beneath the town hall light. And I quote it. And then, an iceberg 100 miles long called B-15A shall come up from the sea. After drifting around the Ross Ice Shelf for a few days, it should crash into the Drygalski Ice Tongue near McMurdo Research Station on the coast of Antarctica. There will be lots of pictures. End quote. An iceberg the size of Long Island colliding with Antarctica? This can only mean one thing. Nothing! I'm completely dry on this one, folks. Look, you know, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
wait, but Your Grace, doesn't this portend anything terrible about humanity? I mean, everyone knows the acronym for NASA is one letter away from spelling Satan. And what about the name B-15A? That has no significance at all?
I guess B-15A could be short for Beelzebub. -15A or something. I don't know. Give me a break. It's nothing, okay? Frankly, I'm tired of the head games with this Jesus guy. He's rapturing. He's not rapturing. I can't keep track of this crap.
Can we just cut the music for a second?
What? Hey, what's the... Hey,
don't you ever want to talk about my book, Mark?
Not really, Cardinal. We do the other thing.
Oh, well. Shuntasa patapa. Keep on fornicating, fornicators.
Oh, no.
If you're not doing anything this Saturday, I'm signing copies of He's Just Not That Into You at Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue.
Oh, man.
We'll keep the light on for you in the self-help section.
Oh, man. Are you all right? What's going on? Are you all right, man?
I'm just kind of tired.
You got to pull it together, Cardinal. We need this. We need the other thing.
You guys can just help yourselves.
No, we need guidance. We need spiritual guidance.
You don't need guidance. I can't give you anything that you can't give yourself.
No, Cardinal, you've got to pull it together. You've got to find your connection with God again.
Go to a 12-step meeting.
Oh, God. I am in a couple hours, but that's not going to help.
Get a life.
Get a life.
I had one. You took it.
Get a life. Who told you to interject?
Oh, no. Anyway, I'll see you at the Barnes & Noble.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Fifth Avenue.
Whatever.
Whatever. All
right, man. I hope you pull it together by next week, man, because, you know, people will rely on you. Nothing?
Nothing. I got nothing.
Get out. Get out. You disgraced, double disgraced, Cardinal.
He loves black roses.
No, he doesn't. No one likes a black cross. Man, that was all very moving. Where are we now? What do we do now?
We got a guest.
Okay, dude. Wow, that was heavy. So, yeah, before we bring the guest on, I'd like to play a couple of sound bites just quickly. You know, let's get him on the phone first. Conservatives love scaring people into thinking Social Security is a train wreck waiting to happen, but how likely is it that Social Security will run out of money when baby boomers start to retire? Joining us by phone from Boston, Massachusetts, is Roger Lowenstein, who wrote the cover story on Social Security in this upcoming Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Good morning, Roger Lowenstein. How are you?
Morning. I'm great.
Good. Thanks for hanging in there.
Yep.
You know, we had a problem with a man of the cloth who fell apart in here.
Well, I'm enjoying a cup of coffee.
So okay, that's good. So let me just play a couple of these quotes from this week. First, we have George Bush, and then we have Dick Cheney. Chris, can we play those for Roger?
If you're 20 years old, in your mid-20s, and you're beginning to work, I want you to think about a Social Security system that will be flat bust, bankrupt, unless the United States Congress has got the willingness to act now.
Primary argument against personal accounts is that somehow they are too risky. Many people would spend their retirement in poverty because the investments they choose will be along the lines of lottery tickets, dice games, and the racetracks.
All right, so
thank you very much.
Roger, obviously we added some things. They're doing the.
Oh, was that obvious? I think that's legit. I missed that. You know, I was going to vote for them.
But I mean, why do you? Obviously, what is going on with Social Security? Why do they keep saying it's going to be bankrupt? And is it going to be bankrupt? Because we talked to Paul Krugman. No one seems to think that.
Well, it's not going to be bankrupt. They have a trust fund now that has $1.5 trillion dollars in it. And it's going to be mounting, and according to Social Security actuaries, and they employ about 40 people who look at birth rates and death rates and, you know, economic forecasts and so on, over the next 75 years, their best guess is that there's a less than 2% deficit, which means it would be a very easy problem to fix. And by the way, there's a good chance that their estimates are too conservative and that no fix at all is needed for reasons I go into the story, but they have to do with things like, you know, will there be as many medical miracles as Social Security is betting on? You know, medical miracles are great. We live longer, by the way, but it's not so great for a Social Security actuary, obviously, because it means the benefits are going to be higher. But in either case, the fix is very small, and nothing happens until 2042. So we have plenty of time to prepare for it. You know, I don't know if. Have they figured out how they're going to pay for Iraq in 2042? I mean, that's a long way off.
Roger, in your piece that's going to be in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday, Question of Numbers, you go over a bit of the history of Social Security, and there were a lot of people, including at one point the New York Times, who argued against it. Why has, for example, George W. Bush been able to apparently succeed in putting this on the front burner when everybody from Barry Goldwater to Milton Friedman to David Stockman couldn't get it done?
Well, this program has been the scourge of conservatives for 70 years. And the interesting thing is that FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, set it up in a way to withstand all this. And he had a very shrewd perception of what was going on. The New Deal was setting up all these welfare-type programs because, for obvious reasons, because the country was in a depression. But he wanted Social Security to be something different. He wanted it to be self-supporting, meaning funded by payroll taxes, so people would feel like this isn't welfare, I've earned this, and that's how people do feel. And he sensed that welfare type programs would come under attack, and they did, and many of them have been dismantled. But Social Security has always been something that the public supported because they don't feel like it's welfare, they feel like they've earned it. And I think for that reason, conservatives, it just galls them that here's a government program that works, that people feel they're contributing to, and that they're entitled to, and it's always been, you know, public enemy number one. Interestingly enough, when Eisenhower became president, of course he was the first Republican after the New Deal, a bunch of Republicans went to him and said, all right, now we can repeal this thing. And he said, no, you know, he said, this isn't the Democratic program anymore. This is, you know, this is America. This is apple pie. But sort of waiting in the wings, the group, I guess, that evolved into the neocons, people like Reagan.
No.
were trying to, were attacking it. And they got together with the American Medical Association that was trying to stop Social Security from expanding into health care with Medicare. And they led a kind of a grassroots campaign against it until finally, George Bush has got it on the front burner.
So quickly, and the last question,
yeah.
You know, is there any way to look at this other than, you know, in respect in relation to the government's relationship with Enron and some of the promise that they had promoted in that relationship? Is there any way to look at this other than gambling?
Well, no. I mean, if you put money in the stock market, it's going to be at risk. And, the beautiful thing about this country is everybody's free to go out and buy stocks any day they want.
So why don't they just give the people the money?
The idea of Social Security is, this is going to be house money.
Right.
You know, this is going to be safe stuff. And you all are free to go out and invest or gamble or speculate. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of people do it.
Right, but not with this money.
This is supposed to be safe money.
So it is gambling. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate you being with us. Look forward to reading the column. Roger Lowenstein, his column will be the cover story in the New York Times Magazine this weekend.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, that's this is basically the consensus of smart thinking people who actually are representing those who need this money. That's, you know, it's interesting. It's just that, like, basically, you know, Cheney is saying, look, do you want to get by on what you have protected by the government, you know, which isn't that much, or do you want to step up to the table?
Yeah,
huh?
Really.
What do you want? What do you think? We'll be back with the dog of the week after this. 47 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition.
Who are these two?
Morning Sedition.
On record, it's out. It's no secret anymore.
Morning Sedition from Air America Radio.
Wow, that sounds like the Black Crowes doing Jay Giles. There's no shame these guys have to, as far as, you know, ripping people off. I'm not going to make it a theme of my day. I mean, once I leave the studio, this is over, and I'm heading for Coinstar. That's my afternoon, man. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to get all my little tub loads of change. I'm going to pour them in a bag, and I'm going to walk over to the store, maybe the Key Foods or whoever the hell I got it. I don't even know where there's a Coinstar in the store. I got to go find a Coinstar.
You got to find a Coinstar?
Nothing more exciting than dumping that money and hearing that sound.
Or maybe you'll win, free tickets to the Black Crowes.
You feel like you're winning something, though. The little ticket comes out. It's like,
yeah.
Wow, I just turned that into money.
Money. Real money. Folding
and you're
money.
Like, where did the Ukrainian nickel come from?
Hey. Or the laundry lamp.
What is this doubloon? This is a doubloon in my Coinstar.
And pieces of eight.
I keep losing myself. So you know what time it is now, Riley? It's Friday.
Yeah.
And it's this hour, so it means it's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Yeah. How strange it is that the top candidates for this week's dog both come from the place I just came from, across the pond, Great Britain.
Yeah.
There's Prince Harry, third in line to the British throne, and not a brain in his stinking head. He showed up at a costume party dressed up in Nazi regalia. Nazi regalia? Brilliant! Yet Harry is a rank amateur compared to our actual choice. Sir Mark Thatcher is the son of former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. To say he's had a checkered past is an understatement indeed. He's only called Sir because he inherited the title after his father died. There have been reports in the past linking him to arms sales to both Iraq and Saudi Arabia. He also had to settle a civil racketeering lawsuit for an undisclosed sum back in the day. Now, Thatcher, who lives in South Africa, has pleaded guilty to, of all things, trying to plot a coup against the government of Equatorial Guinea. That's right. Sir Mark has admitted plotting with a group of mercenaries to topple the oil-rich nation's president. You know, they just found oil in Equatorial Guinea. Lots and lots and lots of oil. His plea allows him to get off with a $500,000 fine and no jail time. He also gets to act like he was an unwitting sucker in the coup plot.
Mm.
Now, here's the good news. This dipstick is coming to the U.S. to live. He was here before, and he's coming back.
Dipstick.
How come he's not on anyone's terror watch list? Sir Mark Thatcher, you're living proof of the perils of inherited status. You're also the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
Ooh. I've always hated trust fund kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's the ultimate trust fund kid.
That's for sure. I'm going to take over country. I'm bored.
You know, he got lost once, and he was trying to show you he was a manly man. He was trying to do driving that Paris to Dakar rally that they do.
Yeah.
He got lost.
The dumb trust fund kid.
Yeah.
Anyways, our book of the month club is now starting. This is the inaugural book in the Morning's Edition book club. It's Sam Lipsight's novel, Homeland. We're hoping to read these books, and then we'll have the authors on the program to talk with you about what you've read. He's coming in today.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's going to come back in a few weeks after you get it. You can purchase Homeland at morningsedition.com. It's hilarious. If you like The Catcher in the Rye, if you like dark comedy, if you like, you know, genius, you know, I would get this book and read it. And we're going to talk to Sam, who I talk to a lot. But I happen to love the guy. In this scene we're going to play before he gets here, it's the main character, Lewis Milner. The Homeland is based on a series of letters written by a somewhat bitter man named Lewis Milner to his high school alumni news letter. In this scene, he's visiting two of his neighbors who just happen to be speed addicts.
I knocked on Kyle and Jared's door. Jared answered, shirtless, jittery. "We'll turn it down," he said. "Turn what down?" "The music," he said. "You're not playing any music." "Oh," he said. "I was just checking in," I said. "Hollis was hanging out with you, right?" "Hollis. Yes, Hollis. Six letters." Jared stuck his hands in his armpits, gibbered under his breath. "Are you okay?" I said. "Me? I don't know, man. How can I know if I'm okay? How can I make that judgment objectively? I'll tell you what I do know. That meteor, the one that took out the dinosaurs? Kyle and I were just talking about it. A rock from space. A piece of masonry, right? A piece of free masonry. Are you following? Stop me if this is obvious to you. Corn comes from the Andes. Andy Griffith was the sheriff of Mayberry. Omar Sharif was in Lawrence of Arabia. Mayberry. Aberry. Arabia. Coincidence? This is shit nobody's looking at right now. This is shit they'd kill us if they knew we knew. I won't tell anybody, I said. I haven't even told you yet.
He's great. This book is killer.
Ooh.
It's one of those books where he really reaches into the dark pit of a type of productive apathy that I think that at least, you know, I certainly identify with, and I know Sam does. And there's got to be plenty of people out there in the world that would identify this. I'm telling you, if you like Catcher in the Rye, this thing is like, you know, a hot rotted, you know, revamped. It's not even. It's just in terms of the character of somebody who is. Not bitter, but certainly, you know, personally, you know, I guess, what would you call it? Disenfranchised from society and sees it a little clearer than the rest?
Well, sees it very differently from the rest. But now we want to let the audience know that if you're on your way to work now, because we know some of you got to be there 9 o'clock Eastern, all right? You can listen in at morningsedition.com. You'll hear Sam not long from now.
Yeah, about a half hour.
About a half hour. So you don't want to miss that, all you speed freaks and different types in our audience.
Tweakers.
Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you. Good morning to all our friends all over the world, streaming in Australia, Japan, Switzerland, Sweden, Germany,
Burundi,
Burundi, England,
Equatorial Guinea.
Equatorial Guinea, that one guy.
Sir Mark, good morning to you.
Yes, nice. Thanks for coming along. Oh, yes, Sir Mark. That guy. Man, big day for me today, Riley. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to sit down with Kent the Colonel Jones and talk about some stuff. I'm going to go home. I'm going to put all my change in a bag and go to the Coin Star Machine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure they have these all over the country. This is not some sort of New York thing, I imagine.
No. It's a national chain, and there's nothing quite as satisfying. As you mentioned last hour.
Clink, 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 yeah. Clink, 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 clink.
Yep.
Yes.
It's like getting the slots in Vegas. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, I win. No, you don't. You're just converting your change into cash money. No, I win. Yay. Look, it's a gold doubloon.
Yep.
Weird, I get that. Yeah, your toothpicks and guitar picks.
Guitar picks and all kinds of stuff. But that doesn't ever get into the machinery.
And I'll tell you, I'm not being paid by Coinstar. I'm not paid to be, no one's paying me to sponsor anything on this show yet. But I did get an email that said Subaru might be interested. And I'm like, give me a car. Give me a car. And I'll drive that car all over the place, man. I'll get stories for Morning Sedition that you wouldn't believe in my new Subaru if you give me the car just to drive around New York. It's fun to drive in New York, Riley. You get to do it in the morning.
I do get to do it in the morning, and it's not as fun as it looks, even though there's nobody on the road when I go in the morning. But you get to see the weirdest things. You get to see cabbies doing 360s on rain slick rope.
Yes.
You get to see guys who are working. I mean, there's a surprising number of people doing road work.
A lot of road work being
done. At 3:30 in the morning.
That's because you can't do it during the day in New York because it'll congest the entire eastern seaboard.
Yeah, it will. But you know what? These guys get paid like $5 million an hour when they work those during those weird times like that.
What's
they
the number?
Got shift differential.
Where do I play? $5 million an hour? What am I doing in here? I'll be out on the road wearing the orange outfit.
Just go to one of those construction companies.
Carrying a real tool like a real man?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind doing a little of that kind of work.
Well, you know, you can always have the stop thing and, you know, go.
I'll be the guy waving the guy through. No, I used to love it when I had a car. I might get a beat-around car, you know, because I don't have one. There's no point to having a car
don't
when you live in New York City.
Don't get a New York City car. Don't get a used car that has been used here.
I know, because, you know, everything's been replaced. It's been rusted out. Yeah. The suspension has been replaced. The tires, the wheel wells are all screwed up. I used to have a beat-around car when I lived here, but I got to get a place to park. It's a pain in the butt to park it on the street. But I used to love whipping around when I did comedy at night, just to whip around at 2:30, 3:30 in the morning when the FDR is empty.
Empty, man, is that.
It's kind of fun to drive up and down the streets of Manhattan when there's nobody around.
But you know what, though? It's getting to the point in Manhattan now that late at night, you know, you're talking like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, there's no traffic in the direction I'm going. But when you look at the opposite direction, it's like rush hour. Everybody's on their way home from being out partying all night, I guess, until the bars close.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, lanes and lanes of traffic.
Drug people on Thursday nights. That's always
fun. That's always fun.
You know, if there's somebody else throwing up.
Well, you know, the other funny part of that is that when you get down here in the Midtown, because we got a lot of bars in the neighborhood that we're located in, which means that a lot of pedestrian traffic is staggering around. You know, when you're going across town, you just don't want to hit anybody.
Yeah.
Because they cross the street. It doesn't matter whether the light's green, red, or yellow. They cross, and then you see people on the sidewalk. I saw two guys and a girl.
Yeah.
God help the girl. She could barely walk.
Oh, yeah, they were helping her.
Helping her.
They were helping her out, helping her get home.
Helping her to their home.
Dude, you got to have, I can't, it's awful.
Yeah, it is.
So here's a negligible news story. Here we go. The brothers Chris and Rich Robinson are reuniting. Does anyone care that the Black Crowes are reuniting? And the only reason I'm bringing this up, and it's been a theme all morning, because Dan Pashman, somehow or another, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, the beacon of musical integrity, is completely defunct. It's completely been debunked. First of all, Dan Pashman doesn't like hot sauce. How is that possible?
How can you listen to music without hot sauce?
What kind of rock and roll person doesn't like hot sauce? Then he says, you know, this is after an hour, months of him saying that U2 sucks and that they're an unoriginal band. Now, I want you understand something, people. I know this isn't politics, but this is the country we live in.
That's right.
Now, first of all, it's not that I love U2. I do understand that U2 has a tremendously original sound, and I'm willing to bet you money that, you know, the Edge's guitar sound, although it's a derivative a bit of Bo Diddley, it is certainly a way beyond extension of rhythmic guitar playing. And you listen to a U2 song, any of them, bam, that's U2. Whether you like them or it doesn't matter, even if it's a crappy one. All right. But now, Black Crowes. Bad. Black Crowes hacks. They're hacks. They hack Zeppelin. They hack Aerosmith, maybe. They hack the Stones badly. They don't even bring anything to it.
Don't forget Otis.
Well, they just stole it. Well, you know, you can play covers if you do them originally, but they were just doing it to get on the map, and they can't even stay on the map.
But
and
see, the trouble with Batman, them is...
Get Pashman in
here. Yeah, get him in here.
We've got to finish this.
When they do Hard to Handle... Otis Redding had a unique way of saying baby at the beginning of that song.
Well, Otis Redding...
And they go, baby!
Otis Redding was an original.
Yeah.
These guys, I'm ashamed of you, Dan Pashman, son of Solution Pashman, because they are not original. They are hacks. And if you just want to talk about seeing them, like, maybe you know what they should tour with? The Spin Doctors. That's about the equivalent of this band.
There's a lot of room between original and hacks.
They're hacks.
There are a small handful of original bands in the history of rock and roll. Just because the Black Crowes are not one of them does not make them a damn good band.
Rock,
No, does rock and roll, not make them a dancer. But get it straight, man.
Rock and roll is an evolving art form, and we're not that far from the source, and some people really take it to a new level. These guys are not one of them. U2 is, whether you like them or not. Of course.
U2 has never taken anything to another level.
Baloney. You know what? If you listen to the beginning of any Black Crowes song, the only reason you might recognize it is to say, "These, oh, that's that thing they stole from those guys." All right, you don't say that about U2, and it's not that I like U2. I'm not arguing on behalf of U2.
Right.
Okay.
This is a very different argument than the one you were making a couple hours ago.
Which
Mark.
Is what?
Which is the Black Crowes don't sell enough tickets for me to think that they're good.
That's right, because they tried by stealing an Otis Redding song, and they couldn't even bring it up to that, anything original. They tried to trick people into liking them, and yet people saw right through it. I went and saw the Black Crowes. You know what? Disappointing. Well, the guy was doing a half-baked Jagger, couldn't keep it together, really, and then just I know that riff, that's from the Stones. Oh, that's one they stole from Led Zeppelin. Not even a homage, just a hackneyed version of something that been done before.
The Black Crowes are The Black Crowes are honest, which is more than I can say
for
you. What
are you crazy? They're stealing.
No, they're not. They're a rock band. You could classify 99% of rock bands as stealing from Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones. That doesn't mean that they're not good.
No, they add to the evolution of rock and roll. These guys do
There's
nothing.
There's like
10 aggressive.
Bands in the last 50 years that have added to the evolution of rock and roll.
You too.
Including several Miles Davis ensembles.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Velvet Underground.
Just because the Black Crowes are not on the same level as Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones doesn't mean they're not a damn good band. I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Black Crowes belong next to the Rolling Stones.
All I'm asking. But you are saying that they are better than U2.
Yes.
That's crazy.
No, it's not crazy.
Hey, did you read the stuff I gave you, man?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you ever listened to that guy's work?
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
All right.
I'm saying.
Eddie Hazel.
The late, great Eddie Hazel.
Maggot Brain.
Yeah. Maggot Brain.
Yeah. All I'm saying is if we could please. I mean, you can't, you know, like when people throw around the word genius.
Yeah.
It annoys me.
I do not call anyone the Black Crowes.
I know, but you are throwing around damn good. Okay? Now, I got to say, for myself, right? Damn good, you know, in its true context, it's sort of a colloquial southern kind of, you're doing sort of a hillbilly Jewish thing with the damn good. All right, now, first of all, I don't mind that, but let's go with, they're okay, mildly entertaining.
Right.
Do we have to go with damn good?
They're better than okay, and they're better than mildly entertaining. They're a damn good rock band. They rock.
I won't have
and they know
it.
How to rock, and U2 doesn't know how to rock.
Define rock.
But U2...
Rock is something you feel, Riley.
I know that,
explain.
But define it. What is it?
It's like the judge
Is it like
says,
a tingle in the end of your fingers, like, or your ears itch? What?
It's like the judge says, I can't define it, but I know it when I hear
okay,
it.
Okay, but can't you have that experience walking by some crappy bar downtown and just hearing some blues noodler who nobody knows sitting in there just playing some, you know, crappy cover of just another blues song? They are an uninspired bar band that deserve no attention whatsoever, and the guy's, not only is he a hack in the mediocre, you know, part, you know...
Dude, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to sit here and listen to this. The Black Crowes are so much better.
Yes, you are.
And you are giving them credit.
We're not on break yet.
They're not a bar band. They're a damn good rock and roll band. And there aren't many bands that have succeeded at playing blues rock and ever become as popular as the Black Crowes have become.
Speaking of somebody who's unable to appreciate evolution...
Yeah.
Of rock music. We'll be back with some victory for secularists in the evolution cases down in Marietta County. We'll be back. You're leaving. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio. Great. More hacked Stones caca from the Black Crowes. It's unbelievable. Why do you keep doing this? Listen to that. You know, what is that? That's like, it's just a ripoff of, it's all Exile period Stone stuff. I just have contempt with them. Because I love, like, I even like Aerosmith.
Not an Aerosmith guy. Dude, I'm not a rock guy.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I know.
I know the Stones, the first song the Stones did that was a hit in the United States, It's All Over Now, was done by the Womack, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know. And like, in a lot of cats that, R&B, jazz, all that stuff, it's all what all this music is taken from to begin with. You know, they just ripped off. I mean, oddly, Otis Redding covered the Stone Satisfaction.
Yes, he did.
And he hit a hell of a go at it, actually.
Yeah.
But, I don't even want to talk about it anymore because we know. People who know music, they know music. And people who understand what the Black Crowes are doing, they're like it's like some sort of charade. I mean, it took me Aerosmith. If you think about the first three Aerosmith albums, even the first six AC/DC records, even the first five ZZ Top albums, this is all before Dan Pashman was even awake, all right? You know, and these are bands that some people would say, like, those guys suck now. But you know what? You listen to them, there's real rock and roll, and then there's the Black Crowes, second generation garbage.
What about Thin Lizzy, man? You forgot
Thin Lizzy. Great. Great pop band. Well, I'm just starting to understand, to be honest with you. All right. Here's the Pompeo came in from Ramon earlier wearing a bioterror outfit. And all this stuff is based on truth. Now, most of this Pompeo is real, I got to be honest with you. 10 a.m. meeting to discuss possible non-lethal chemical weapons agenda. Number one, an aphrodisiac. Chemical weapon that would provoke widespread homosexual behavior among enemy troops, dealing a severe blow to morale. That's truth. That's Emmis. Note, be careful how I phrase things. Note, after using this weapon, our troops will have to deal with the enemy's devastating put-downs, vicious gossip, and catty remarks. Number two, chemical weapons that attract swarms of enraged wasps or angry rats to troop positions, making them uninhabitable. Upside down. Upside. Yes. Upside. Wasps and rats wouldn't expect armored Humvees or ask embarrassing questions. This is based on truth. I'm not making this up, and I think that weapon is called garbage. Just dump garbage. All right. Number three, chemical weapons that causes severe and lasting halitosis, making it easy to identify gorillas trying to blend in with civilians. Note, if these soldiers are captured, their breath could cause a severe problem for our jailers. Initiate Project Altoid. Project Altoid. All right, 1 p.m. Test a couple of drops of aphrodisiac weapon. If it works on me, it'll work on anyone. Note, if it does work, get tickets for The Boy from Oz on a night I can truly appreciate it. Okay, a little stereotyping there, but nonetheless, it's funny a little bit.
Mm.
You people! All right, so now moving on. Tremendous, tremendous things happening in the world, all right? Actually, it's nice to have something positive, right?
Yeah.
Man, am I too much coffee guy or what? This is the first time I drink coffee all week. It's unbelievable. Usually I drink tea, and now my brain is melting.
Mm.
Coinstar. Anyways, Coinstar. Yay!
Yeah, baby!
I turned my change into money.
Oh,
all right, anyways. Federal judge Thursday ordered a suburban Atlanta school system to remove stickers from its high school biology textbooks that call evolution a theory, not a fact, saying the disclaimers are an unconstitutional endorsement of religion, adding, the judge said, while evolution is subject to criticism, particularly with respect to the mechanism by which it occurred, the sticker misleads students regarding the significance and value of evolution in the scientific community. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a tremendous, tremendous breakthrough and a great barrier put up against the Christo-fascist zombie brigades of the neocon death cult who are trying to stupidify our country and their own kids. They're like, listen, son, we it's exciting that you're going to school, but we'd really prefer you just keep your mind closed to science.
Yeah, well, some people still believe in the store. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
Whoa, let's rephrase that.
Oh, I'm
stupid
sorry.
People.
Okay.
Still believe in the stork.
No, look, I have a child,
yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
And my child is wrestling with some of these very same issues, although why, I don't know, because she's only eight.
Yeah.
But she really...
It happens earlier.
Yeah,
now.
She questions, you know, well, if I'm taught in church this thing,
mm-hmm.
but yet, on the other hand, you know, I watch a nature show and they say that, you know, man has evolved from whatever. How do you reconcile that? How do you make it work? Well, that's my job. I don't need her school to teach her that. I want her school to teach tolerance for all different kinds of people, all different kinds of religions, whatever. I'll teach her about the God part. I'll teach her about the evolutionary part.
Right. They can't impose or legislate their beliefs onto the rest of us. And if they were truly Christian, they would realize that that's what they're doing. And if you are, you know, and I have nothing against belief and I have nothing against people's beliefs. A lot of people believe a lot of different things. I mean, take into mind that, like, you know, creation myths. I mean, come on. The Bantu tribe of Central Africa, in the beginning, there was only darkness, water, and the great god Boomba. One day, Boomba fell sick. He vomited up the sun, then dried up some of the water, leaving land. Still in pain, Boomba vomited up the moon, the stars, and then some animals. The leopard, the crocodile, the turtle, and finally some men. Men were last on the list coming out of his... You know, he was dry,
I knew him.
He was dry heaving by the time men came out.
I knew him. He was a corrections officer.
Chinese. In the beginning, the heavens and earth were still one, and all was chaos. The universe was like a big black egg carrying Pangu inside itself. After 18,000 years, Pangu woke from a long sleep. He felt suffocated, so he took up a broad axe and wielded it with all his might to crack open the egg. The light, clear part of it, floated up and formed the heavens. The cold, turbid matter stayed below to form Earth. Pangu stood in the middle, his head touching the sky, his feet planted on the earth. Feet, it's all goo from Pangu. It's
from
the
Pangu,
egg.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is that whatever you believe, that's fine, but you shouldn't put it... Basically, when you tell kids, look, here's your options. Either you can get involved, because they say that they're engaging the kids in critical debate, but if you tell kids, here's your options. Either you could investigate something that's complicated and has a lot of nuanced, you know, ideas in it that lead to the truth of science, you can do that, or you can just say, the guy made it up there.
Yeah.
Well, what is a kid going to do? If you're giving the kid an opportunity to cop out and be ignorant, you know, and be supported by, you know, religious ignorance. It's almost like saying, and I'll repeat this again and again, it's so complicated. I don't understand it. It must be magic.
It's magic, but it's political magic because they're creating the future Republicans of America.
Yeah, but
with
it failed
stuff.
In Cobb County. The political magic, the political mojo didn't work.
Alabama's next.
Yeah, I hope so. So we're going to come back with Sam Lipset. I can't wait to see him. Maybe we'll have breakfast with me later.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go to Queenstar together.
Woo!
Yay!
Is he going to read?
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent. We'll be right back. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Ugh. 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm sorry I got all jacked up before with Donald Rumsfeld's Palm Pilot. I've never done that in the history of Morning Sedition. Forgot to mention who Palm Pilot was because it's relatively new that we do other people's.
Yeah.
Other than, but that's whose it was. So if the joke was hinging on whose it was for you, go back and have the laugh now. Just try. Go ahead and go back in time and have the laugh now.
TiVo it.
Oh, dude. Let's take this call from Ted in Nebraska.
Hello, Mark and Mark.
Yeah.
Once again, the liberal media seems to think it's okay to denigrate people with actual religious beliefs when you have none of your own.
Oh, no, I hate when help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
South Pennsylvania.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 20 after the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, kick back and enjoy the kickback. That's right. Inauguration's coming and Mark the Shark is psyched. Put your hand on the Bible and God help me. Wow. Yes. Hey, why are the liberals trying to bring down Charles Grainer? The man's a patriot, a hero. That's right. Grainer's lawyer was right. What he did at Abu Ghraib is exactly like cheerleading, people. 2, 4, 6, 8. All you Muslims masturbate. That's right. Good job, fella. Pork chops and Coors Light for everybody. How are we supposed to treat these roaches? I mean, oh, hello, Mr. Terrorist. Are you comfortable? I hope I haven't offended you. Please attack us again. Can I get you a prayer mat? Pray for your life, Skid Mark. And Charles Grainer, Mark the Shark salutes you. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the thought that counts. Hey, what about all the rain in California? What's the matter, Hollywood liberals? Afraid of a little water on Malibu Barbie's dream house?
I lost my People's Choice Award. Please give me some cocaine and a lawyer.
Hey, Barbie, Mark the Shark's coming at you with another mudslide. Yeah, a little of that. It's 22 after the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis.
Yeah, right you are. Right you are. It is a good thing those liberal morons Brad and Jen broke up. Or as Mark the Shark likes to call them, Brad Armpit and Jennifer Aniston. Am I right? Am I right, people? That's right. It's 24 after the hour. Time for the neocon power weather forecast. Sorry, L.A. It's going to keep coming down. And by it, I mean the house just up the hill from you. There goes the neighborhood. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Wright and Early.
Whoa, what happened, man? It's that coffee. I just drank too much. I blacked out again.
Man.
I got to see a doctor. Was everything all right?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Okay. It's scary when that happens. All right. In the studio, why do I even need to read this? This guy, not only is a friend of mine, but he's a genius!
Boom.
Morning Sedition is kicking off its book club with a terrific novel called Homeland by Sam Lipside. He joins us now. He's written a couple of other books. Last year, we got The Subject Steve, which was a novel. Very good. And we have Venus Drive, the story collection. All will be available for you at morningsedition.com for a slight discount to encourage you to read Sam Lipside, one of the great funny writers. How are you, Sam?
I'm great. Great to be here.
It's nice to have you, man. So it's so funny because, you know, we're friends, obviously, but also...
Are we? Really, though?
I don't know. Let me think about it. Now you put it that way. You know what? Maybe not. Maybe
I don't think so.
Hey, no, I know it's all
friendship
about
of convenience, man.
Yeah, we're the only two that are willing to live in Astoria.
Oh, wow.
I love Astoria. But, no, it's interesting to me because I remember that, you know, when you were helping me, you were sort of mentoring me during when I was writing my book, which you can get, you know, for $2 at Amazon. Is that...
I think it's 85 cents.
Oh, right? Is it? Yeah. Check this one. Check. Oh, no. But I remember I asked you, you know, what you were working on, and you were literally, you said, well, I got a sentence. I think it's going to turn into something.
Yeah, that's how it started. Yeah.
Like that, but not just, but you really mean that. Like, I'm like, do you know what the story's going to be? I don't know. It's sort of, I'm just building on this thing. Is that how you write? Is that the process of how you write?
Usually, yeah. Usually I start with a voice that just keeps going. That's what happened with this book.
Really?
I was looking at one of those old alumni bulletins. And,
right.
I was just wondering what would happen if people, you know, didn't say, oh, Joey got promoted and Billy's getting A's, but started, you know, saying, actually, things are really bad right now. I'm really unhappy.
So that was the through line. That is the through line.
Yeah,
the
that's the through line. It's a series of updates he writes to his high school alumni bulletin.
Now you model, it's not that you model yourself out, but your influence are, because, you know, I read, you know, a lot of books. I don't read a lot of fiction, but I mean, you are honestly, not just because you're my friend, I mean, I get deep, loud laughs when I read your books out of identification, but also because your language is so tight and your voice is so concise in terms of hitting the funny. And who are the guys that you really look up to as far as, you know, role models?
Well, you know, I guess when I was younger, I was really influenced by writers like Stanley Elkin, I think you mentioned the other day, but, guys, Barry Hanna, people, my old teacher, Gordon Lish, just people who were really funny on the page, but fun, not kind of superficially funny, say, but trying to go for something a little deeper, a little stranger, little more unsettling.
Yeah, a lot of people just like, there's a lot of people that suck. There's a lot of, like, hack writers. There's also a lot of people that write comedy that suck. You know what I mean? Like Andy Borowitz, for instance. Can't stand the guy. All right? There's some other people. Like name some writers that suck, Sam.
Andy Borowitz, maybe?
No, but I mean, I just want to know, like, you know, because, like, there's a type of there's a type of satire that's not really satire. And the truth of the matter is that the age of the wordsmith and the age of people who are literary and really use the language is behind us in a lot of ways. People don't seem to care like they used to.
That may be true, although I think that there are a lot of people left who really do care about funniness and through language.
Yeah.
And,
are there success stories that, you know, that you're just sort of like, oh, that guy's not really that funny?
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry, man. I'm making my
friend that guy.
Exactly. Which is the basic, you know, theme of Homeland. Tell us what it's about exactly.
It's about a guy named Lewis Minor who starts sort of in his 33rd year, starts writing these rants to his high school alumni newsletter, which they don't publish, but he keeps writing them. And they sort of, they're not only about his kind of philosophy of life, but they narrate the stories of other people who are still in the town in New Jersey where they grew up. And his other name is Teabag. And he got it in an unfortunate incident at school, a hazing incident, which... He doesn't really accept the trauma of it, and he will call himself Teabag on occasion. But,
we're not even going to explain that. If you don't know, you know, you'll have to read the book to find out. But there's so many things that happened in this, because you've got a relationship with the principal. He's got the woman that, you know, he used to be in love with but has contempt for now because she, what's her name, Stacey Rison?
Stacey Rison, yeah.
All the stuff that we went to. If you grew up in a small city in America, you can completely identify with the plight of this guy's childhood, but also with the sort of, like, you know, bittersweet disappointment of his adulthood.
Yeah, I mean, we all have, you know, the characters are not, I try not to do stereotypical characters or stock characters. But Stacey Rison, for instance, we all have a Stacey Rison in our lives.
Sure.
She's
sure.
President of the class. She's now president of the Alumni Association. She's a successful doctor. And
I just felt hate.
Yeah, and she's just everything Lewis is not, and she's very judgmental.
Yeah.
She's at one point in the novel, she writes him a letter of censure telling him, because she sees the letters even though they're not published, because she runs the alumni bulletin, and she, you know, tells him, you know, to stop foisting his pathetic fantasies on the good, decent people of... Their mascot was the Catamounts, so
right.
Of the Catamount community.
Yeah,
and there's a lot about the Catamount community.
Well, the funny thing is like whenever a reunion comes and you get the invitation, and once they track you down and you see who's running it, you're like, oh, I'm not going.
I hate that guy.
They're still in charge of stuff. Well, there's a character. There's a hilarious bit of business about a rock band, a leader of a rock band who went to high school with you guys. And I think Sam's going to read a piece with that in it, right?
I will, yeah.
And we're going to continue talking with Sam Lipsyte. The book is Homeland. Go to morningsedition.com, pick it up. He's going to be back in a few weeks to talk about it and answer some of your specific questions. This is our first book of the Morning Sedition Book Club. We'll be back in a second with Sam Lipsyte, 43 past the hour.
Hi, this is Mike Mills from REM, and you are listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Okay, 48 past the hour, we're going to put this thing down. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition, the weekend is upon us. We're talking to Sam Lipsyte. The book is Homeland. It is the first book of the Morning Sedition Book Club. We're going to talk to Sam about, you know, how he went about getting this published. It wasn't easy, and it came about in a way that some of the great books have been published. You know, it had to begin in Europe. But let's do the segment first. Why don't you set up this piece you're going to read, and then we'll talk about that story.
Well, I've decided to read this piece because I think it relates to one of your rants earlier today.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Are we okay here?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
One time a guy took a cell phone call while I was reading. And
really?
I was at a reading, and he said, I'm at a reading. He was in the front row.
You guys deal with that, you know, audiences.
Here's Lewis Minor goes to the mall and runs into Stacey Rison, who I mentioned, and her husband, Philly Douglas, who's the guy who gave him the reason for his teabag name.
Oh, no.
And, and they get into an argument about another classmate, Glaive Wilkerson, who's suddenly become a rock star.
Yeah.
And Lewis hates his band. And and they get into a fight, and Philly Douglas just tells him to get out of here.
Okay.
Don't come back here, Philly shouted past his shoulder. It was a silly thing for him to say, Valley Cats. No man can tell another man to stay out of the mall. That's not how America works. That's not what the framers intended. Philly must have been flustered, all those dangerous old nut-dangle tingles, plus to meet someone with a legitimate sonic aesthetic. How can he defend a band whose hideous music is rivaled only by its insipid lyrics? Catamounts, I implore you to shield your young from this pernicious drivel. What happened to hating the state apparatus, or wanting to be regional antichrist? Sure, it all gets set to a car commercial in the end, but at least give it a shot. Bang some dope for Pete's sake, roll in broken glass. Don't flee the melee in your heart. Don't bitch to Jesus about it either. If that Essene wild man was around today and, say, headlining some monster summer tour, you can bet your ass Spacklefinger wouldn't be allowed within 500 miles of the stadium. There would be a tremendous wall of blood-colored lightning to keep those bastards at bay. That's just my opinion, of course. But I'd also take any odds that if there's one thing Jesus and the devil agree upon, it's that Glaive Wilkerson is not punk. The man has the soul of a college boards coach.
Yeah. If that doesn't entice you, I don't know what will. So now what happened, Sam? I remember, you know, there was a period of time where a lot of people were reading this book, and your two other books were critically successful. This one, even the bad review was great. The guy who could just, like, basically just said you were what?
There was, for this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first line of the review was, another marijuana moonbeam from reefer-brained Lipsyte.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And the ironic thing is, you don't even smoke reefer. And it was, and then the other, some other guy.
I started.
But The Voice raved about it. Newsweek raved about it.
Yeah,
and yet you had trouble publishing in this country.
Right, well, now. It came out in England a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no problems there.
Yeah.
I sort of imagine, it's like Jimi Hendrix, you got to go over there.
Yeah, exactly.
But it went through about 24, 25 publishers here. And I was always wondering what the deal was.
Yeah.
And people who were kind of around in those meetings said that a lot of it had to do with we were gearing up to go invade Iraq, and they weren't looking for this kind of material. They were kind of after, you know, maybe
something rah rah, like, you know,
a little more rah rah.
We want something the guys can.
So I feel that it was Rumsfeld who really came down on this. And
you hold him to blame.
Yeah, yeah.
We blame him for everything.
We blame him for a lot. Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to save the paper to armor the Humvees or something. I don't know. But
what are your favorite books? What do you think are the most, you know, the most cutting sort of satirical books that have really made an impact, you know, in your life?
Well, I mentioned those writers before. Terry Southern, I always thought was really funny.
But a lot of people don't know Stanley Elkin. I mean, I didn't know him until you turned me on to him, and he's hilarious.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that, you know, was, you know, critically acclaimed, did not sell a ton of books. What people don't realize in this day and age is just how many people don't sell books who are geniuses.
Yeah, well, if you don't sell books, you are a genius.
Right.
But that's what I keep telling my wife.
I got a question.
In the case of The Black Rose, though, if you don't sell tickets, you're not a genius.
You're not a genius.
Suck.
Absolutely.
All right, go ahead, Riley. I'm sorry.
So when are you going on Oprah?
Oh,
why would I go on Oprah? Oh. I'm on the Morning Sedition Book Club now.
All right. Yeah. Good answer.
But, you know, I would love to hear Oprah talk about this material. You know what I mean? Because the thing about Homeland, and it's not even just because I know you, is that there is a part of us, there's a part of our generation that feels, you know, ineffectual, that feels like, you know, our needs have not been met, that the dream did not pan out, and that the best we can hope for is this life of sort of, you know, perpetual bitterness and, you know, autoerotic hobbying. You know, I think it plays to a real part of me, certainly, and I'm assuming a lot of people have
it. It plays the autoerotic hobbyist part.
Yes, absolutely, which you were criticized as being a chronic autoerotic hobbyist.
Another review called me a chronic masturbator.
But aren't all writers chronic masturbators?
They are. I'm those Reaper references.
I'm just being a little more honest about it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're doing. That guy was crucifying you for your honesty, man.
Exactly, for the truth.
The next book, though, you don't have time for that stuff anymore. You got a kid in there. You got a baby.
That's true. A little Alfred.
Yeah, little Alfred Major. Now, is it inspiring?
Yeah, it's really inspiring. Well, he just started to say blah, 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 which my father points out is all I've ever said.
So. Your father, Robert Lipsyte, the writer.
Yeah.
How's that going, that big pee-pee war between you and your dad?
Oh, we've buried the pee-pee hatchets.
That's good for you, man.
You mentioned that you know, you were able to get pretty much instant acceptance in England, and yet it was tough here. Was that difficult for you to stomach as a writer?
Well, I didn't really understand it, because I really thought there was a readership here for this kind of work, and I think that it really has to do with the projections that people in suits with calculators are making, and they're guessing as much as anybody else, you know.
Yeah.
It's the idea of why, you know, how can there be Hollywood bombs if they know what they're doing?
Yeah. Right.
Because they don't. They're guessing a lot of the time. And so I felt the victim of a bad guess, that's all.
Well, I think there's definitely a market for this type of stuff, and I think that there should be a market. And as you said, it's a very honest book. Now, when it comes to, you know, finding the time to work now, I mean, you know, the kid's got to be taking up a lot of time. And I know this to be true, but I can't wait for the next book about just, you know, the weird sort of,
it's going to take a while,
love-hate relationship between you and the 6-month-old Alfred Major. What was your...
Speaking of my father, he said to me, you know, he loves hanging out with his grandson because they have a common enemy.
Yeah. All right, we're talking to Sam Website. The book is Homeland. It is the inaugural book of the Morning Sedition Book Club. It is available with his other books, Venus Drive and The Subject Steve, at morningsedition.com. And we encourage you to read it, because it's very funny. We're going to have Sam back on January 28th to take questions and discuss the book in detail with those of you who read it and want to talk to Sam. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Awesome, Mark.
I'll see you in a few minutes at breakfast. We're going to go eat, right?
Not Coinstar?
We'll do Coinstar later. later. I haven't hit him with that yet. Do you have any change? All right, here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, urge Congress to make gay aphrodisiac chemical weapon available for civilian use. Two, send out mass email with the subject heading, horny teens are hot for you. And when they open it, it says, because of global warming. Three, prepare for Bush's inauguration. Restoke your disgust to pre-November 2nd level. Four, for Martin Luther King Day, criticize the Blue Man Group for not having any black members. Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. You know where Prince Harry got that Nazi shirt? Cheney's closet, man. It looks like the wardrobe trailer for Triumph of the Will in there, man. Wake up, sheeple. Have a good weekend, Riley.
Have a good weekend. On Monday, we're going to have Ken Burns in here, acclaimed documentary filmmaker. He's going to talk about an extraordinary figure in black America, Jack Johnson, former heavyweight champion of the world. And Jeff Jarvis is back. You know him, editor of BuzzMachine.com.
Our manic media critic.
Media critic.
Media
analyst. We got plenty to criticize.
Media maven.
Sam, thanks a lot. Maren, have a good weekend.
You too, Riley.
And we're going to try and do it all again on Monday here on the Air America Radio Network.